quality and quantity, both important.
It's associated with anxiety and depression, for sure, even in adolescents and teenagers. That's why I think that's so important. And there's now increasing evidence that chronic insufficient sleep is probably related to Alzheimer's disease.
How sleep impacts the body, today in the Upper Cumberland. Are common sleep disorders keeping you awake? Well, you're not alone. According to estimates, 50 to 70 million Americans have ongoing sleep disorders. They range from insomnia to more serious issues like sleep apnea. The Cookeville Regional Sleep Center deals with all types of sleep disorders, many of which have long-term impacts on your health. Our conversation continues with Dr. Jim Davis. You mentioned the quiet time before bed. Now, I have to have, and maybe this is, I've just conditioned myself to feel this way, and I'm wondering if other people do this. I have to have television on to have the noise. Like the complete silence.
Right.
Makes me crazy.
Well, I sleep with a fan. So I think, and part of that's to drown out the surrounding and outdoor noise, if there is anything. And we do condition ourselves to do that. And I've done that.
But is that also maybe part of, you know, you hear people that have the little machines that have thunder or have rain or the babbling creek or whatever?
A continuous white noise is probably not doesn't disturb a person's sleep. But now a television or a radio or something else like that, where the sound is continually up and down and modulated, people that does impact people's sleep. And if you, when people have been monitored with those devices going, you can see the little a little arousal, not awakening, but an arousal, which is basically a very brief awakening in which the patient doesn't become aware or the person doesn't become aware that they're awake, but it's disturbed their sleep. And any interruption in sleep degrades the quality of sleep. And that's part of the problem with people with sleep apnea being sleepy, is because it's not the apnea making you sleepy. It's the interruptions in sleep that's making them sleepy, sometimes hundreds of times a night. So, any noise, anything that, our ears continue to work even when we're asleep. It's taking in the sound and it's registering, whether we are aware of it or not.
You mentioned there are four stages of sleep. Can you walk us through how that works?
Sure. Well, the transitional stage of sleep is called stage one, and you see a slowing of the brain waves and the muscles begin to relax. And those are some things, by the way, we measure in the sleep lab. Things like muscle tone, brainwave patterns, and that sort of thing. So you see that little transition into stage one where they're just drifting off. And there can be noise in the room and a person be asleep in stage one, and yet they can tell you what was being said if you shake them. It's like my father falling asleep in front of the television, and you turn the television off. He says, don't turn that off. I was listening to that. You know, everybody has that story. But so stage one, shouldn't spend much time there. Stage two is a deeper level of sleep now. And you see increasing relaxation of muscles and slowing of the brain wave. We should spend about 50% of the night in stage two. Stage three is what's called delta sleep, and it's the deepest level of sleep. You see big brain waves, but they're very slow. And a healthy middle-aged person probably gets 15% of the night there. Unfortunately, as we get older, we get less of that. And if we live long enough, we may not have any deep sleep.
Or at least, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And why is that?
Do we know?
I would win the Nobel Prize if I could.
That's what we want you to do, is to win that.
But
because that almost goes counterintuitive. I would almost think that the older you get more.
Right.
That. Isn't that interesting?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Young people get lots of that. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's probably a reason we don't understand as to why they, what's happening in, you know, in that stage of sleep. The theories about what goes on during the and during REM sleep. And then the final stage of sleep is REM sleep, where we're dreaming. And that's a very odd stage of sleep, because if you look at the person's brainwave, it looks like they're awake because their brain is very active. But if you look at the muscle tone, they don't have any. They're paralyzed. And people don't realize that. You cannot move when you're dreaming. People that do that have a disorder. People that act out their dreams have a disorder, and it can be very dangerous. And I treated a number of patients for that. It can really be dangerous. They can injure themselves. They can jump out windows. They can strangle their spouse. They can do all sorts of things. So REM sleep is about 20% of the night. And the interesting thing about that is that doesn't degrade over time. So a person who's 25 years old has about 20% of REM of the night in REM sleep if they get enough sleep, and a person who's 80 years old also should have about 20% of the night in REM sleep. So that something's happening there that is important, and it probably has something to do with processing the information that we receive during that day and categorizing it, putting in its place.
So am I understanding you correctly to say that that part, that dreaming tends to happen right before we wake up because it is the fourth stage?
Think of the stages of sleep as happening over and over throughout the night.
Okay.
So you'll cycle through these stages of sleep. If you get 8 hours of sleep a night, you probably will have four REM stages. And as the night progresses, you get less and less delta sleep, where in the second half of the night, it usually disappears, and your REM periods get longer and longer. So often the longest REM period is the last one of the night, and it's just before you wake up. And that's why the dreams we remember are usually those, unless we happen to wake up in the middle of the night, we've had a dream. But, you know, we usually don't want to linger there too long. We want to go back to sleep.
So interesting. So many questions. We'll get to more of those with Dr. Jim Davis. Scott Clayton is the Sleep Center Director. They both are part of the Cookeville Regional Sleep Center. We continue. Dr. Jim Davis from the Cookeville Regional Sleep Center is our guest. You hear people say, oh, I woke up out of a deep sleep and I feel terrible. I feel like a zombie.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. That's why I would encourage people to avoid taking long naps during the day, because if they do take a nap for an hour, they may be asleep long enough to cycle down into delta sleep. They've allowed themselves that much time. And if you wake somebody out of delta sleep, they will feel awful and groggy for a while. Now, eventually they'll wake up, but the best short nap during the day is probably 15 to 20 minutes. You probably will get into stage two, but it's, you know, if you wake up out of stage two, you won't be groggy and disoriented for a while. There's a disorder called confusional arousals, where something disturbs a person's sleep during the night. It may be something pathological, and they'll be very confused and disoriented. So, and that's usually from stage three or delta sleep. That's also when people do things like sleep talk and sleepwalk, which people usually think that's when you're dreaming. No, you're not dreaming. You shouldn't be dreaming. You should be paralyzed then. So if you're doing, so those sorts of disorders, they're happening in the delta sleep, out of delta sleep. Something may trigger it or disturb it and interrupted.
When you see someone who has a sleep disorder or is unable to get enough sleep, is it generally an issue with one of the four stages that they're not getting enough of, or does it just depend?
If they have a sleep disorder, whether it's sleep apnea or something else that's interrupting their sleep at night, they may not be able to cycle down. In other words, stay asleep long enough to make that transition from stage one to stage two to stage three, because that's pretty much how it works, stage one, two, three, and then REM. And that's that 90-minute cycle that we go through four times a night and should. So if there are interruptions to it, they may not get into a delta sleep. In fact, someone, for example, with severe sleep apnea may not have delta sleep. It may not. They may get it. They may have very little REM sleep as well. Part of the reason that happens in people with sleep apnea is a much worse in REM sleep because of the paralysis and the physiology there. So their brain may not let them stay there. So, yeah, there are if you're just not getting enough sleep at night, you'll still get, but if your sleep's otherwise normal, you'll still cycle in and out of those different stages of sleep, but you'll probably get less REM sleep because your longest REM is going to be later in the night. It's felt to be probably, the theory is, it's probably protective to humans that we get most, if not all, of our delta sleep in the first half of the night, just in case we don't get enough sleep. So we're getting that delta. So that's important.
Scott Clayton of the Cookeville Regional Sleep Center. If I hear our conversation and say, I may need to get some help, do I need a doctor to get me an appointment at the sleep center, or can I just pick up the phone and call?
Both can happen. And a lot of it depends on the insurance, if they require a referral or not. But, you know, a lot of our patients, they'll self-refer to our sleep center. And that's perfectly fine, because we will see the patient inside the clinic and determine what steps we need to take towards their testing.
Let's talk about some of the ingredients that maybe help us sleep. Dr. Davis, let's start with products that are over the counter, sleep aids.
Yeah.
What are they doing to get you into a sleep cycle?
Well, there's a lot of them. Now, the over-the-counter products, the the most widespread widely used sleep aid is, it's in so many different things. Benadryl, basically, is what it is. But, you'll see it added to a lot of other things, you know. And it's an antihistamine. And histamine is a chemical in the brain that promotes wakefulness. And so antihistamines tend to block that. And so that's widely used. And there's nothing wrong with using it occasionally. What tends to happen if you use it chronically, though, you become tolerant to it so that it loses its effectiveness. And it can be even dangerous in older people because it can make them groggy, and there's a risk of falling if they get up at night to the restroom, which most of them do. So, and it can lead to some next day grogginess too, and hangover, and it can affect certain other organs in the body that a urologist could explain to you that you might not want to fool with. So, any sleeping aid it will be effective in rendering someone unconscious. That doesn't mean the sleep they're getting is normal sleep. It may be degrading the different stages of sleep. So it won't be normal restorative sleep. They may be unconscious, but it will have effects on them over time. If you read the literature on all sleep aids, none of them say they should be used long term. Usually 1 to 2 weeks, and they're useful for that, and they're helpful for that.
What's the impact of caffeine on sleep?
Long lasting, surprisingly. I would encourage people, you know, you've heard this, I'm sure, and everybody has. Well, I can drink a cup of coffee and go right to sleep.
My grandmother.
Yes.
Every night.
And I would tell them, and I asked them, you know, and this was often the case, yeah, do you wake up in the middle of the night and have trouble going back to sleep? That's a bomb. You just swallowed a bomb, and it's going to go off later on.
It may not go off immediately.
That's right. And it may, again, degrade the quality of the sleep. You may be sleeping, yes, but you may not be getting the deep sleep. You're going to be able your sleep's going to it's going to take less to disturb your sleep with that caffeine in there. And the action of caffeine, say an average cup of coffee, can be up to 8 hours. So we would encourage people cut off any caffeine early in the afternoon. You know, you can have your cup after a good strategy if you're going to take a little nap is drink a cup of coffee, lay down, take your little power nap, and when that caffeine hits you about 20, 30 minutes late, you'll be awake. And then it's effective. Don't do it later than that, though, generally.
You're going to think I'm kidding about this one.
No.
Counting sheep. Why does that work?
It gets your mind concentrating on something else besides your problems or your next day activities. There are certain strategies to improve people that have chronic insomnia, and one of those strategies, rather than counting sheep, is to concentrate on relaxing certain different parts of your body. Starting at the top of your head and moving downward. Concentrate on your neck muscles, your back, your shoulders, and then your arms, and you work your way down. It takes practice, but that basically is doing the same thing as counting sheep. It's not the relaxation so much. I hate to use meditation, but you know, you're concentrating on something else besides your worries or your planning, and
it's focusing your brain kind of in a different area.
Right.
Next week, our discussion continues of the work of the Cookeville Regional Sleep Center and how they can help you. We hope you'll be with us.